So I thought I would start, first of all, so I'm in the Department of Biostatistics at Johns Hopkins University, and I'm also wear a second hat as the Associate Editor for Reproducibility at the Journal of Biostatistics, and I'll talk about that in a second. But I just want to talk a little bit about how I kind of came into this reproducible research business. And you might say it was, in some sense, under a hail of bullets. I started my career doing air pollution and health research, and I came to Johns Hopkins. I worked very closely with a number of people, John Samet, Scott Zeger, Francesca Domenici, and they had been working on a number of controversial studies of air pollution and mortality, and controversial to some, I should say. And they had gotten many inquiries, primarily from industry-related groups, challenging their results, and there have been a lot of investigations about whether certain things have been done correctly and things like that. So Scott Zeger decided that it's an incredible amount of work to address all of these. Sorry, you're all over there. So I'll put it over here. To address all of these inquiries, so we're going to put all the data and all of our code just on a website. And actually, they got some funding to create the website. So they put everything. Everything's out, still out there. And the noble idea was that if you've got a problem with what we've done, all our code and all our data is out there. Show us where we did it wrong, right? And if you do something different, and it turns out the results are the opposite or whatever it is, then that's great. You took the same data that we used and wrote your own code or did whatever you did and got something different. And most of these challenges were essentially about the type of model used, whether you adjusted for confounding appropriately, things like that. And so that was in some ways successful, but in many ways it raised some issues regarding whether, so one question I have, which was not really kind of in the discussion that we originally had here, was what should we do if the people who are reproducing the work, do not hold themselves to the same standard that perhaps we in this audience might hold ourselves to. In particular, there are interested parties out there in various areas of science and that are not particularly interested are interested in kind of deliberately obfuscating issues and making things hard to interpret. And I think on the one hand, you could argue that as scientists, we have an obligation just to make knowledge available and to further the field of science and to further society's knowledge. But on the other hand, I think at a practical level, it's very difficult to convince someone to say, look, you need to put your data out there, even though you might be subjected to hours upon hours of just harassment, essentially, based on your putting your data out there. And so that's just one issue I just want to raise. Contributing to the discussion creep, I think everyone here raised the issue of the kind of different levels or different modes of reproducibility. I think anytime you talk about reproducibility, there's this issue of where you draw the line. And for example, a large study that cost millions of dollars might ultimately, the paper that came out of it might ultimately have resulted from a simple, regression model with 100 or 200 observations or something like that. And so there might be a data set out there with 200 observations, and maybe that's reproducible. Or, of course, all the data came back going way back, probably collected on forms and things like that and scanned, and there could be all kinds of things that happened in between. And so, where you draw the line, of course, the farther back you draw the line, the more expensive and more difficult it gets to do this kind of thing, or to do the reproducing. So maybe I'll get to the original questions. The first question was about what's the investigator's responsibility. I think for me, maybe I take a slightly different view, but I think the investigator's responsibility at minimum is that the investigator should be able to reproduce their own work. And to make this easier on yourself, you do a lot of the things that perhaps some of us would ask for, in terms of like making the code readable and making it exist, for example. And keeping the data around, many of you I see in the audience have been in the business for a little while, you might go think back and whether you might be able to reproduce your dissertation research or something like that. And the answer is probably no, or maybe not. and you might ask, well, why is that? And maybe the data is not available now, or maybe you forgot the code, or it's on some hard drive from 20 years ago or whatever. And so I think the minimum responsibility for an investigator is that he or she should be able to reproduce, you know, their own work upon request, and you know, it shouldn't be all that painful. I think the idea of making it reproducible by others is laudable, but I think, I mean, that in itself is not very well defined, because not everyone, and particularly, you know, research involves resources, and not everyone has the same resources. So if I conduct a study that, you know, took 2 months to run on a cluster of 1,000 computers, it's probably not reproducible by most people. And so in some sense, no way that I can make that study, make that available to others for reproduction. I can make the code available, I can probably make the data available, but the results probably can't be reproduced. So, but I can reproduce them, you know, for sure. So I think an investigator's responsibility is that at a minimum. For journals, so I'll talk a little bit about my role as associate editor of reproducibility at Biostatistics. So this was created by Scott Zeger and Peter Diggle, who were the editors of Biostatistics a couple years ago. And they decided that they wanted to have to incorporate reproducibility into the publication process. And so I developed a policy in 2009 for Biostatistics, which essentially involved, it was a very kind of, we tried to make it as least cumbersome as possible. And the idea was that, you know, people would submit papers in the usual way, or get reviewed in the usual way, so not involving any computation at this point. And then if it were decided that the journal, that the article would be accepted, then authors could request a certain level of reproducibility kind of review. And the idea was that there were multiple components. There was, you could submit your data, you could submit your code, no data. Sometimes there's no data in these papers. Or you can submit both your data and your code. And the last level was you could submit your data and your code and ask for a reproducibility, kind of a reproduction of the results. And so, and the system that we used was that, you know, if you give your code, you'd have a C, there'd be a little C label on your paper. And if you submitted your data, there'd be a D label. And if you both, you know, code and data, be DC. And then if you got a, if we were able to reproduce your results, you got an R. So the R was the, you know, and it's not because my name is Roger, coincidence. So we got a number of submissions. Many people volunteered their data or their code. And we don't do any review in those cases. We just trust that this is the data or this is the code. And a number of articles requested a reproducibility review, in which case it came to me. And I reproduced their, you know, whatever was published in the paper. I didn't, you know, reproduce everything, because if it wasn't in the paper, I don't know what to look for. So, but things like numerical results and plots and things like that in the paper, I would just reproduce it. And luckily, I think we got 4 or 5 submissions that we got were very easy to do, and they were easily reproducible. So we have about 4 or 5 papers in the journal now over the last 2 years that have gotten the R stamp, and so the policy. I mean, I think so far the policy has been successful in the sense that it hasn't resulted in much controversy. Although there was an issue about a year ago where I checked on the journal website to see where all the data and the code were, and lo and behold, it was not there. So we had to, you know, make sure, we had to kind of get the data and the code and make sure that it was actually posted on the supplementary materials website. So that's still an issue. I think in the event that, say, something could not have been reproduced, I guess it's unfortunate that all the articles are reproducible in some sense, because we weren't able to really test the policy. But in the event that something were not reproducible, I imagine we would work with the authors to the point where we could get it to be reproducible, or, you know, something else would be uncovered. So I think the role of journals, in a broad sense, is to kind of coordinate the publication of computational research. It's hard to specify details, but some possibilities are, you know, there are some journals, for example, like the Journal of Statistical Software, that have what are called technical editors, and these editors look at your code, they look at, you know, and they look at specific details of the technical aspects of publication, so if you're writing in LaTeX or if you're using an SVG or something, you know, making sure that the code runs and everything. And in particular, the editorial board of the Journal of Statistical Software is obviously very fluent in the variety of languages that statisticians use. And so they are able to review the actual code that people submit, because the submissions are just software packages, right? And so it's obviously not reasonable to think that every journal should have an editorial board full of fluent computational editors, but I think the idea of having some another editor to edit an aspect of a paper that's not the printing, or not the kind of printed material, but rather the computational aspects of it is one possibility, though probably not realistic. For academic institutions, the ones that have students, I think the key responsibility is to teach the students about this and to teach them skills that will allow them to do their work reproducibility from the start. There are many different types of tools, I think, that contribute to reproducibility of one's own work and how to organize the research and kind of best practices for doing computational research. I think that's our number one responsibility. I'm not sure we're doing a particularly great job at it yet. I know at Hopkins we have a policy to make sure that everyone's PhD theses were reproducible, but I think it was very lightly enforced. And so we could do a lot better job. I think teaching them how to do it and then making sure that it's done. And lastly, for the funding agencies or regulatory agencies, I don't have much experience with the regulatory agencies, but for funding agencies, I think, so there is a huge infrastructure problem with respect to this issue, which is that if everyone in this room decided, I want to make all of my research reproducible, right now, I don't care about any of the other issues that have been raised, I just want to make everything reproducible, it wouldn't be clear how you do that, or it wouldn't be clear necessarily where you go. So, for example, who's going to host the data? Who's going to host the code in perpetuity, perhaps, right? Or at least for as long as it remains interesting. And so, we need to build some infrastructure for the coming onslaught of people who want to make their research reproducible. Certain fields have specific resources in genomics or in social sciences. But there's no general purpose solution for science itself. And I think funding agencies could play a role in supporting some of this development so that people can have access to tools that would help to make their lives easier to make their work reproducible. For those people who want to do it, I think there are people who don't want to do it and then we have to convince them in other ways, but for those who want to do it, we need to make sure that there are tools and there are resources available for them. So I think I'll stop there.
Before opening